words on a page with pictures beside. This is all I have, this humble book. But oh, what words, what pictures, what a book. I am P.J. Lynch, Laureate Nanogue of Ireland, and you're listening to Night Night Northwest.
Hello and welcome to everyone here and to all our listeners at home. Today we are recording from the Central Library in Letterkenny, County Donegal. This is the first episode of Night Night Northwest. Over the course of this radio series, we will bring you 14 unique programmes, all based on Irish children's literature. You will hear stories about a snobby cat, a dreaming tree, a little bear who just can't sleep, and Daddy Nut Brown Hair who says, "Guess how much I love you." We are delighted to be joined today by sixth class pupils from Letterkenny Educate Together National School. Our guest reader is Siobhan Parkinson. Siobhan served as Ireland's first ever Laureate for Children's Literature, Laureate Nanogue. This evening, Siobhan will read two stories for us, The Nightingale and the Rose by Oscar Wilde, and her own story, The Rose and the Nightingale. This is Siobhan's interpretation of the famous Oscar Wilde story.
Hello, everybody. I'm very glad to be here. I was asked to bring along my Laureate medal because I think in the last series of stories, PJ brought his Laureate medal with him, so I brought mine along as well. Well, I'll pass it around so you can all have a look at it. If you'd like to see it. So being Laureate, I suppose, means that you're kind of a spokesperson for children's books for a couple of years. You're the kind of the go-to person if somebody wants to interview somebody about children's books. You get to talk a lot about children's books. You get to be, you get to answer the questions. You get to meet loads of people. You get to meet children. You get to meet adults. You get to travel a bit sometimes, depending on what your program is. And it's a really great way of bringing the idea of children's literature into the public and getting people interested in children's books. The theme of this series of programmes is Oscar Wilde, the stories of Oscar Wilde. Have you heard of Oscar Wilde, the Irish writer?
Yeah.
So Oscar Wilde lived about 120 years ago, maybe more. He would be known particularly for his plays. He wrote very funny plays for the theatre. But he also wrote a collection of fairy tales, which are for children. And they are very beautiful and very poetic, but they're also a little bit funny. He's writing in the kind of the fairy tale style, but he's also kind of having a little bit of a laugh about it as well, I think. And you'll probably get that as I read the story. The Nightingale and the Rose by Oscar Wilde. "She said that she would dance with me if I brought her red roses," cried the young student. "But in all my garden there is no red rose." From her nest in the holm oak tree, the nightingale heard him, and she looked out through the leaves and wondered. "No red rose in all my garden," he cried, and his beautiful eyes filled with tears. Ah, on what little things does happiness depend. I have read all that the wise men have written, and all the secrets of philosophy are mine. Yet for want of a red rose is my life made wretched. "Here at last is a true lover," said the nightingale. "Night after night have I sung of him, though I knew him not. Night after night have I told his story to the stars, and now I see him. His hair is dark as the hyacinth blossom, and his lips are red as the rose of his desire. But passion has made his face like pale ivory, and sorrow has set her seal upon his brow." "The prince gives a ball tomorrow night," murmured the young student, "and my love will be of the company. If I bring her a red rose, she will dance with me till dawn." "Here indeed is the true lover," said the nightingale. "But with me she will not dance," said the student, "for I have no red rose to give her." And he flung himself down on the grass and buried his face in his hands and wept. "He is weeping for a red rose," said the nightingale to the other creatures of the forest. "For a red rose," they cried. How very ridiculous. But the nightingale understood the secret of the student's sorrow, and she sat silent in the oak tree and thought about the mystery of love. Suddenly, she spread her brown wings for flight and soared into the air. She passed through the grove like a shadow, and like a shadow she sailed across the garden. In the center of the grass plot was standing a beautiful rose tree. And when she saw it, she flew over to it and lit upon a spray. "Give me a red rose," she cried, "and I will sing you my sweetest song." But the tree shook his head. "My roses are white," he answered, "as white as the foam of the sea and whiter than the snow upon the mountain. But go to my brother who grows round the old sundial and perhaps he will give you what you want." So the nightingale flew over to the rose tree that was growing round the old sundial. "Give me a red rose," she cried, "and I will sing you my sweetest song." But the tree shook his head. "My roses are yellow," he answered, "as yellow as the hair of the mermaiden who sits upon an amber throne, and yellower than the daffodil that blooms in the meadow. But go to my brother who grows beneath the student's window, and perhaps he will give you what you want." So the nightingale flew over to the rose tree that was growing beneath the student's window. "Give me a red rose," she cried, "and I will sing you my sweetest song." But the tree shook his head. "My roses are red," he answered, "as red as the feet of the dove, and redder than the great fronds of coral that wave and wave in the ocean cavern. But the winter has chilled my veins, and the frost has nipped my buds, and the storm has broken my branches, and I shall have no roses at all this year." "One red rose is all I want," cried the nightingale. "Only one red rose. Is there no way by which I can get it?" "There is a way," answered the tree, "but it is so terrible that I dare not tell it to you."
"Tell it to me," said the nightingale. "I'm not afraid."
"If you want a red rose," said the tree, "you must build it out of music by moonlight, and stain it with your own heart's blood. You must sing to me with your breast against a thorn. All night long you must sing to me. And the thorn must pierce your heart, and your lifeblood must flow into my veins and become mine."
"Love is better than life," said the nightingale. And she spread her brown wings for flight and soared into the air. She swept over the garden like a shadow, and like a shadow she soared through the grove.
The young student was still lying on the grass where she had left him, and the tears were not yet dry in his beautiful eyes.
"Be happy," cried the nightingale. "Be happy, for you shall have your red rose."
The student looked up from the grass and listened, but he could not understand what the nightingale was saying to him, for he only knew the things that are written in books. When the moon shone in the heaven, the nightingale flew to the rose tree and set her breast against the thorn. All night long, she sang with her breast against the thorn, and the cold crystal moon leaned down and listened. All night long, she sang, and the thorn went deeper and deeper into her breast, and her lifeblood ebbed away from her. And on the topmost spray of the rose tree, there blossomed a marvelous rose, petal following petal, as song followed song. Pale was it at first, as the mist that hangs over the river, pale as the feet of the morning, and silver as the wings of the dawn, as the shadow of a rose in a mirror of silver, as the shadow of a rose in a water pool, so was the rose that blossomed on the topmost spray of the tree. And a delicate flush of pink came into the leaves of the rose, like the flush in the face of the bridegroom when he kisses the lips of the bride. But the thorn had not yet reached the nightingale's heart, so the rose's heart remained white, for only a nightingale's heart's blood can crimson the heart of a rose.
Press closer, little nightingale, cried the tree, or the day will come before the rose is finished. So the nightingale pressed closer against the thorn, and the thorn touched her heart. And a fierce pang of pain shot through her. Bitter, bitter was the pain, and wilder grew her song. And the marvelous rose became crimson. Crimson was the girdle of petals, and crimson as a ruby was the heart. But the nightingale's voice grew fainter, and her little wings began to beat, and a film came over her eyes. Fainter and fainter grew her song, and she felt something choking her in her throat. Then she gave one last burst of music. The white moon heard it, and she forgot the dawn and lingered in the sky. The red rose heard it, and it trembled all over with ecstasy and opened its petals to the cold morning air. Look! Look! Cried the tree. The rose is finished. But the nightingale made no answer, for she was lying dead in the long grass with the thorn in her heart. At noon, the student opened his window and looked out. Why, what a wonderful piece of luck, he cried. Here is a red rose. It is so beautiful that I am sure it has a long Latin name. And he leaned down and plucked it. Then he put on his hat and ran up to the professor's house with the rose in his hand. The daughter of the professor was sitting in the doorway, winding blue silk on a reel, and her little dog was lying at her feet. You said that you would dance with me if I brought you a red rose, cried the student. Here is the reddest rose in all the world. You will wear it tonight next to your heart. And as we dance together, it will tell you how I love you. But the girl frowned. I am afraid it will not go with my dress, she answered. Well, upon my word, you are very ungrateful, said the student angrily. And he threw the rose into the street, where it fell into the gutter, and a cartwheel went over it. Ungrateful, said the girl. I tell you what, you are very rude. And after all, who are you? Only a student. Why, I don't believe you have even got silver buckles to your shoes. And she got up from her chair and went into the house. What a silly thing love is, said the student as he walked away. It is not half as useful as logic, for it does not prove anything, and it is always telling one of things that are not going to happen, and making one believe things that are not true. In fact, it is quite unpractical. And, as in this age to be practical is everything, I shall go back to philosophy and study metaphysics. So he returned to his room and pulled out a great dusty book and began to read.
What did you make of that? It's a very old story, isn't it? Mm-hmm. How can you tell it's old?
The very descriptive words that you used and the way that you talk of speech, like it's like the olden days, like a bit like William Shakespeare.
So the language is very old-fashioned. Yeah, it's quite different from the way we talk today, yeah. So I'm now going to read my own version of this story, which is a bit different. It's supposed to be all about love, of course, and of course, it's the poor old nightingale that ends up dying for love, even though she's not the one who's in love at all. It's kind of a bit ironic, that, isn't it? And the student who thought he was so much in love is able to forget all about it, isn't he, very quickly? So that's typical of Oscar Wilde. He'll have this kind of very kind of serious-seeming story, and then he'll kind of... It'll all suddenly change and disappear, and the story ends differently from what you might expect. There once was a girl who was not in love with a tedious old student. But, unfortunately for the girl, the tedious old student was in love with her. He was not old in years, only in his fuddy-duddy manner and his fussy habits. His shoulders were bent from hunching over books in the university library,
His eyebrows met in the middle in a constant frown from picking over semicolons, and his elbows were worn to the bone from leaning on his desk. He was, in short, a right specimen. Though he had nice hair, so black it had a blue sheen to it, and his eyes were rather beautiful. Every time the girl and her friends tried to arrange a little fun, the tedious old student would want to come along. They hired a boat with a gramophone for a river picnic, and the elbowy old student turned up with a Foxford rug and a plastic box of sandwiches and insisted on joining them. They got tickets to a rock concert, and no sooner had they settled themselves on the lawn of the big old house where the concert was held, but the Foxford rug was spread out beside them, and there was the fuddy-duddy wearing the wrong kind of jeans and pouring tea out of a tartan-patterned old vacuum flask. Pre-milked tea, ugh. And when they went to the trendiest place in town for the most colourful cocktails, you can guess who was there, sucking on his pink striped straw and nobbling all the olives and rice crackers. It was time to call a halt, the girl said to her friends that evening in the cocktail bar, and they all agreed that the situation could not be allowed to continue. It was the college ball the following week, and sure as anything, he would be there in his father's dinner jacket, trying to get her to dance with him. The best plan, said a friend of hers, is to promise to dance with him on one condition, and then make the condition impossible. But of course, you have to make it look possible, or otherwise he will not be fooled. So the girl and her friends spent the rest of the evening coming up with various impossible conditions. But that is not as easy as you might think. Tell him he will have to wear a decent suit, suggested one friend. That seemed a good idea, because the fuddy-duddy old student always wore terrible clothes. No, he could just hire a good one, said the girl, or borrow one. Tell him he must collect you in a chauffeur-driven vintage Rolls-Royce, suggested another friend. He'll never be able to afford that, not even for one night. He might be able to borrow one of those too, said the girl. But the main problem is that I do not want to be collected by him. I don't want to spend half an hour with him in the back seat of any kind of car. Tell him he must bring you a perfect red rose, suggested another friend. What's so impossible about that? Asked the girl. It depends what you mean by perfect, doesn't it? Said her friend slyly. No matter how beautiful the rose, you can always find fault with it. That's clever, said the girl. That's what I'll tell him. The fussy old hunch-shouldered student was ecstatic when the girl said she would dance with him if he brought her a perfect red rose. He went first to his mother's garden, but the roses there were all white or yellow or pink, so they were no good for his purposes. Then he went to the florist shop, and the roses there were all beautiful, but they had no scent, and a rose without a scent is far from perfect. Then he went to the rose walk in the park, where the fragrance of roses filled the air, but the roses were all overblown and losing their petals. The student began to see how difficult a condition had been imposed upon him, and he was in despair. He went to the pub to have a long drink and a long think. And there he met an old friend of his, who worked in the pub most nights as a cabaret singer. She was nicknamed the Nightingale because she had a lovely voice and she only sang at night. This Nightingale had been in love with the fuddy-duddy old fusspot of a student for many a long year, and he had never noticed. The student told the Nightingale the story, and she really wasn't sure what to do about the situation. On the one hand, she didn't want to help the student to win the heart of the girl of his dreams because she loved him and wanted him for herself. On the other hand, she hated to see him so sad and lovesick, and she wanted him to be happy because she loved him. If she had had a third hand, there would no doubt have been yet another way of looking at the case. The student was on his third pint by now, and the Nightingale could see that the situation was serious. So she said she would help him, even though it would break her heart. She didn't say that last bit out loud. "How?" asked the student, looking tearfully into his friend's eyes. "I will write you a song," said the Nightingale, "called The Red, Red Rose, and I will teach it to you, and when you sing it to her, she will know that it is perfect." The student was very doubtful. "I am sure she meant a real rose," he said. "Look," said the Nightingale, "anyone at all could bring her a red rose. Only you will have this perfect song for her." And for all he was a fuddy-duddy and tedious old student, he did have a lovely voice. "Come back tomorrow evening," said the Nightingale, "and I will have the song for you." It was 2 a.m. before the Nightingale finished up her cabaret work, and later still by the time she got home. But she sat up all night writing the song, and the next evening she gave it to the student, and she taught him the tune, and he learned the words. "How will she know it is perfect?" asked the student. "By the first line," she said, "because it describes herself as perfect, she will think it is perfect." And indeed, the song began with the line, "My love is a perfect red rose." So the Nightingale gave the song to the student, and the student put on his father's dinner jacket, which is what he always wore when he went to a ball, and brushed his beautiful blue-black hair, and set off with a whistle to the ball. He found the girl, and he asked her to dance, and she said, "But where is my perfect red rose?" And the student sang her the song. She fell for it, hook, line, and sinker, for she was very vain, and she loved the idea that she was a perfect red rose. And so she put out her hand to the student to lead him into the dance. But as soon as the student saw the glint of vanity in her eyes when she heard the song, he realized his dreadful mistake. He dropped her hand, gave a long, low bow in his father's dinner jacket, and turned on his heel and left her standing there at the edge of the dance floor, all alone. We do not know if he went back to the Nightingale, or if he did, what happened next. That is because this is the kind of story where you are allowed to imagine the ending for yourself. Now, one of the reasons that I thought it would be a good idea to read first Oscar Wilde's classic story and then my own story was to kind of give you a little tip for if you're interested in writing yourselves. That's a really good way to get going. If you're stuck and you can't think of a story to write, it's great fun to take a story that you already know and do something that makes it quite different.
I have a question for Siobhan.
Sure.
What interested you to narrate or make books?
I really loved books. And then when I discovered that not only could you read books, but somebody, obviously, in order for there to be a book there on the shelves, somebody had to write it. That was kind of an eye-opener for me, and I thought, that's what I want to do. I love books so much. When I found out that this is a thing you could do with your life, I just wanted to do it. So that's what it was. It was my love of reading as a child that made me a writer, I suppose you put it like that.
Yeah. Okay, who else has another question for Siobhan, or Oscar, or writing, or anything at all? Yes, Keisha.
What kind of process do you go through when you're writing a book?
That's a very good question. That's the kind of question adults ask, actually. Usually, I don't know what I'm doing. I just get some kind of an uncomfortable feeling that I have to be writing and something, and I don't really know what I want to write about. It's all very hazy. So, but what I do is I just sit at my computer and I write a sentence. I just sit there, I think, I know I need to write. I've got this feeling in my body, I need to write, so I just write something. And I might write a sentence, I might write a paragraph, I might write a page, I might write a few pages. And then very often it'll stop, and I'll go away and I'll do something else, and I'll go back to it maybe a while later,
day or two later, a week later, and I'll see then, while I'm looking back at what I've written, I'll say, oh yeah, I think I know maybe where this is going. I know, I kind of maybe think who this voice belongs to or what kind of character this is. And gradually over time, it comes and it comes and it comes. And every day I sit down and I just do a bit more. So I'm kind of feeling my way.
Simple words on a page with pictures beside. This is all I have, this humble book. But oh, what words, what pictures. What a book. I am P.J. Lynch, Laureate Nanogue of Ireland, and you're listening to Night, Night, Northwest.
That's it from this episode of the series. I'd like to thank the children from Educate Together School here in Letterkenny. Please join us next week when we will be broadcasting from Buncrana Community Library, and in our audience will be children from Scoil Isagon, Buncrana. So until next week...
The Nightingale and the Rose by Oscar Wilde, from The Happy Prince and Other Stories, first collection of fairy tales, originally published in 1888. The Rose and the Nightingale from Fairy Tales After Wilde by Siobhan Parkinson. Night Night Northwest Series 2 was written, produced, directed and presented by Alison Toomey, with sound recordist Mary Harkin and editor Orla Malone. A Real Films production, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee, along with the Donegal County Council Library Service and Creative Ireland.